I want to just welcome you for being here. How wonderful. My name is Susan Alatrico. I'm a local Dharma leader and your host today. And there is first on the list, we have a 25-minute guided meditation and then a Dharma talk. And today is a special day because our local Dharma leaders for the Sunday sits are going to offer a type of a vignette. They're going to present 5-minute stories about how they have moved in this new frame of transcendental dependent origination. We've been spending the year on dependent origination, which is showing the causes of suffering. And this flow is showing the causes of freedom and calm and ease. And so each of us are going to present how we have moved through one of the capacities. So then we'll have small group discussions where you will be able to talk to each other. We'll have a Q&A, sharing, and then we'll have closing, which will include announcements, offering of Donna, and end with metta and offering merit. So when we met in person, we have a beautiful tradition of offering a community statement that recognizes that this is a sacred space. And as we enter this space, let us remember that we're entering a sacred space, a space for being in the moment with whatever is present. We recognize our deep connection with one another, where each of us is welcome just as we are. Freeing our minds of greed, hatred, and delusion through this practice offers the opportunity for others to do the same. And it reduces ignorance and hatred in the world. It is with gratitude that we practice together. Now, before we start our meditation, we take 3 community breaths together to further enable this sacred space and this sense of togetherness. So if you would like to unmute for that, you may, or just breathe with me. Thank you for that. So if you could please mute yourself for the sit if you have not done so already. One bell will mark the formal practice and 3 bells will end it. Today in our meditation, we will invite and explore the presence of a possible joy or delight in our practice, and ease and contentment. With that seed planted, let's begin by settling into our meditative posture. The body is upright. Relaxed. Yet alert. taking a moment to check your body, to let go a little deeper. Is there any tension present? Maybe the shoulders, chest, or belly, we could let go and relax even more. Perhaps our hands, or even our face muscles. Just keep relaxing any tension and help your body feel grounded. The body is present just as it is. There's a felt sense quality of heaviness. Let that be known. There is a body here resting on earth. Feel into that felt sense and allow it to just melt the tension that you may have. You may have noticed how your body naturally breathes in, releasing the tension, relaxing and settling in deeper. Are you mindful that you are sitting? Sitting, breathing. Allow this to be fully known, no matter what's happening on the inside. Keep your focus on the present moment's experience. We're simply sitting. Try to set aside all the other distractions in the mind, the busyness, to be here now. Notice if this permission gives you a sense of uplifting pleasure or any sense of joy in the practice, just like this. You might look around your heart and body and mind. Where is pleasure in this moment? allowing your thoughts to let go more deeply into the body, into the breath. In this moment, in this stillness, we give ourselves permission to be here, like this. Can we discover a sense of uplifting joy or contentment? Breathe with it. Breathe through it. What else do you notice? Can you allow yourself to be at ease with whatever is present, with whatever is arising? It may not be comfortable. It may feel good. Can we allow that gentle, caring, soft seeing to be enough? That is complete. That there is nothing else to do, nowhere else to go. Allowing the breath to nourish in the present moment. What are you aware of now? To invoke a sense of delight, we can breathe in joy, breathe out ease. Breathing in, I breathe joy. Breathing out, I breathe ease. In these last few minutes, you can continue, or you may choose to send joy and ease to other people that you may know, friends, family, or people you don't know. May they be filled with joy and ease. May they be content. and for yourself. May I be filled with joy. May I be content. Returning now to the felt sense of the body sitting, feeling its weight, feeling the bones, feeling the skin, the muscle. There is a body right here. Right now, you can start to move your toes and fingers and shoulders, bringing movement back. All right. Well, I'm very excited about our next part. I feel like I don't know, a lot of you may not be aware that we used to read children's stories as part of the Sunday sit. When there was a physical location, the children would come to the carpet, so to speak, and listen to the story, as with the adults. And then they would go back into a play area. It was really delightful. And today, for some reason, I have this anticipation with our new offering. So let me explain a little bit. Well, because Tweri was not able to be here today at our last planning meeting, the LDLs got to thinking about perhaps offering a short vignette, so to speak, on their own experience with one or more of the flowing transcendental dependent origination qualities that lead to liberation. And some of them include faith, you know, what brings us to the carpet and what brings us to the cushion and the practice and what keeps us moving forward. Joy, ease, tranquility, concentration, seeing clearly, dispassion. So these are some of the things the stories will be pointing to. And each person will share for 5 minutes. I'm going to ring a bell in between, and that person will introduce the next person. And then we'll have time to talk about how that all resonated with you. We'll have a moment of reflection after each person's share too. Okay, does that sound good? All right. So Lauren gets to start us off today. Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you. It's nice to see everyone, some new faces and a lot of faces I recognize. So I'm going to start my timer. And the experience I'm going to share happened recently, and it was at a turning point from suffering to faith. But before I continue, I'm going to talk a minute about the word faith, because that there are some problems with that word for some of us. And rightly so, because the Buddha said, come and see for yourself. So faith in the dictionary, I looked it up, has some kind of contradictory ideas. It says faith is complete trust or confidence in something. It could be another definition is a strong belief in God or doctrines of a religion based on spiritual understanding rather than proof, or a strongly held system of religious beliefs or strongly held belief or theory. So another word, trust, might be easier for to describe this link. It is for me. And trust in the dictionary says a firm belief in the reliability, the truth, the ability, or the strength of someone or something. And so for me, the second link, trust, is a little easier and seems to resonate more with exactly how I feel about it. And something is strong and you trust in it for its strength, that does jive with my feelings about the Dharma. So in this situation, what happened, it happened with Tim's first introductory talk on transcendent dependent origination. And I was really interested in exactly how I would go from suffering to faith or trust. So I asked him a question about that, and I do trust him. I've seen him answer a lot of questions. He's very sincere, and he thinks and reflects and then answers. And I can tell that he practices and asks difficult questions himself and faces those answers. So he said, well, you need to pause. And he said, you need to turn toward whatever is difficult, whether it's something that's hitting you over the head, some suffering does that, or whether it's more subtle. So sometimes you have to pause longer. And you go to the first foundation of mindfulness. I mean, this is a way, maybe it's not the only way, but this is what he suggested. And get in touch with your body. Get a felt sense of what that feels like, this difficulty, this discomfort or pain or just unsatisfactoriness, and stay with it. Are there words that come up around it? Are there thoughts, stories, assumptions connected with it? Emotions. Is there an emotion? And he also said, notice the momentum of movement. I wasn't quite sure what he meant, but I thought he might have meant the momentum of dependent origination, going from, you know, discomfort, pleasant, unpleasant, pushing away, clinging, becoming, etc. So I did get a chance to practice this not too long after, and that was with Rodney Smith's book talk last week. He's our founding teacher. And he was talking about Touching the Infinite, his book. So he was saying that there's a continuum from suffering to the end of suffering. I've got to move my thing here. And it's analogous to the continuum from form to the formless. And that's fine. I was finding that interesting. And he said that we project feelings and stories onto objects, sense objects, like things we see. And they become forms that we then desire or have aversion to. We grasp or we push away. but the object itself is empty. And at that moment, I was noticing this feeling of sadness coming up. I was feeling how pleasant it was sitting in my cozy living room right at that moment when I was hearing Rodney. And I was enjoying the colors that I like around me, the paintings on the wall, the lights on the mantle, my Christmas cards, my flowers, how comfortable and warm it was in my living room. And I could feel this sudden loss when I thought of, whoops, that's my that's my timer. Okay. What if I didn't feel that way about this? What if I just saw it as empty? And I thought, how could this be? You know, I was feeling this attachment and identification with my home, my living room, for example. It's mine. It's decorated the way I like. It's my refuge. And then thinking of having to take that away and it was just walls and carpet and, you know, I thought, that's a terrible loss. But the next thing Rodney said was, the Buddha said that in order to end suffering, you have to end the universe that you have created. And I felt the loss of thinking about that again, all the people I hold dear to me, the places I love. And then he said, the part that's alive is the space around the forms we've created. And right now I'm getting kind of choked up. And every time I hear that, I feel that way. So I felt this gasp of understanding. I felt it in my heart. I saw that if I got too enchanted by the forms I have created, I will miss the mystery. And I didn't feel the loss anymore. I felt the gladness. I was seeing my living room with pleasure, but within something really larger, with appreciation for the deep and mysterious space around it. And I felt that I received a shift in perspective. I received a taste of going from the form to the formless. And I'm very grateful for that. I'm done. You can ring the bell. And next will be Sue's. But after a moment of silence.
That was lovely, Lauren. Thank you. So I want to talk about what keeps me coming back to the cushion, or in my case, the chair. I was first introduced to the Dharma at a 10-day death and dying retreat in 1983 with Stephen Levine. And I felt like it was a moment of coming home to both the teachings and the sense of stillness. And after that, I continued to practice, but it was really hit and miss. I didn't have any community. I didn't have a sangha. Many years later, I found a sangha called Blue Spruce. It was before Sims was founded. And it really made a difference to have people to sit with and to talk about the practice and the teachings. And then Sims was founded, and I just jumped in with both feet, and I grew to love the organization, the yogis, our founding teacher, all the teachers that Rodney brought. And there was a growing commitment to the practice. So Sangha meant a lot to me at the beginning, and it continues to mean a lot to me now. And this morning, I want to also share about another thing that keeps me coming back. It's something I call the Dharma voice. It's a voice that lives inside of me. It's a voice of wisdom and insight, which has become available to me at times to show me the truth of the moment, rather than the limited ways that I had been seeing and experiencing and understanding the moment, those habits of mind that we've talked about all year. I didn't create this voice, and I don't tell it when to come. But I believe that the years of practice have somehow manifested into this voice. So I have two short vignettes to share where the voice spoke to me.
The first time I heard the voice was probably 8 or 10 years into my practice. It was during a really tense interaction with a friend. I was feeling disregarded and unimportant, kind of invisible. I was seeing the situation where my friend's needs were taking up almost all of the airspace. And for context, I come from, as we all do, our own families of origin, where we make decisions as children, you know, to how to make sense of our world. I was the youngest child in a family where my mom was widowed at a very young age with 3 young children, the oldest of whom was born disabled. And between my mom and my sister, there wasn't really a lot of room for my brother and me. So this reality kind of created a filter where I was highly sensitive to whether my needs were being addressed. And in situation after situation, through my early adult years and into my 40s, I would see everything through this filter, and pretty much the answer was no, my needs weren't even on the radar, let alone being addressed. So here I was with a very dear friend. I was seeing and experiencing everything through this old filter, and then it happened. There was that voice that said, "Suze, that's not what's going on right now." It just felt like this huge wave of cleaning out how I had always seen and experienced things. It was allowing me to see, maybe for the first time, the possibility that this was a different situation. Now, the voice didn't tell me how I should be seeing it. It only said that the old way was wrong, so a door had opened. The second vignette I wanted to share happened a couple months after my partner of 35 years died suddenly, about 3 years ago. I was so filled with grief and tons of fear about what was ahead for me, huge responsibilities and decisions at my business and property. They were kind of hanging over me. I was overwhelmed. I was alone, feeling sorry for myself, filled with doubt as to whether I could even handle things. And I went for a walk. It was a cold, sunny, late fall day, and I was walking along the ship canal near where I live. The sky was blue, the sun was shining, there were boats on the water and lots of people and dogs walking by and the cormorants flying above. I was sitting on a bench along the canal filled with all of this kind of sadness and overwhelm. And then the voice spoke and said, "Ask me a question, what is missing in this moment?" And I was sad and scared and uncertain, but the answer was really clear: nothing. So does my old filter of my needs aren't important still show up? Oh, sure enough, more often than I'd like. Do I still feel overwhelmed with sadness, loss, fear, uncertainty? You bet. And yet, I trust the existence of this Dharma voice. I never know when she's going to show up and have something to say. So I just keep practicing, trusting that the voice is there and it'll appear when I need it. Thank you. So a little organizational thing, I noticed that Arv has joined us. But I think that it would be helpful to have Lyndall go next and give Arv a minute to settle. I see a shaking of the head. Yes. So I'd like to introduce Lyndall Johnson.
Well, thank you, Suze. And thank both you and Lauren for your sharing. That was beautiful. And I'm going to talk a little bit about my relationship with this whole path of transcendent dependent origination. And this has been part of my practice for a long time, but not necessarily under that name. I learned about it more as the development of the 7 factors of awakening, maybe, or the progression of insight. But I know when I first heard about this, it was really inspiring to me because it presented this beautiful, orderly, logical progression of where we go from a place where we're just pretty ignorant to a place of awakening. And I thought, wow, you know, this really makes sense. And then when I would go on retreat, I actually would be able to experience some of the things that are discussed in this path, you know, getting kind of calming and happiness of being in the quiet, and then that delight in the mind, you know, when mindfulness becomes more continuous and we're really connecting what's happening in the present moment, there's just this feeling of delight in the mind and sometimes in the body too, in this rapture stage, the tranquility and calm, and then every now and then actually having enough clarity of mind to see at least a little bit, oh, that's what the Buddha was talking about, you know, that, whoa, I kind of get it now. And having those kinds of experiences for me was just a really powerful, verified faith, you know, the faith that we have when we hear about the path and we actually begin to practice and then say, yeah, you know, it actually is working the way my teacher said it did, or yeah, I see that too, you know, so this is a very powerful and wonderful thing. But something I also began to realize as I practiced was that the very idea of having a path and having a progression and having things that happened made it really easy for me to start identifying with that process as my spiritual journey and what was happening to me, and beginning to sort of look for the next thing, try to make the next thing happen even. And then all of that doubt when it didn't turn out quite like I wanted it to. So all of these attitudes of mind, of wanting and of identification, that just would throw me right back into that cycle of samsara that we've been talking about before, you know, of suffering. And so this was really a struggle in my practice, or it has been a struggle, that way in which I would get in my own way of actually understanding things. And so one of the things I have found more recently is that there's been a shift with the emphasis being less on the path. Not that I don't have a lot of faith in the way things unfold and a love for this, you know, picture, but because my mind can get so caught, a shift from that emphasis and more a shift in emphasis to the present moment. And so the faith is not so much that this will happen to me or I can do any kind of a thing on the path, but just having the faith to show up and do nothing and just let it unfold the way that it unfolds. So that's my contribution. Thank you for listening. And hopefully Arv is ready to go after we have a moment.
Yeah. Thank you, Lindo. I can really, wow. I'm really glad that I had a moment because I got to hear what you were saying and really envelop myself in the feeling of what's being done in this talk and in this sangha today. So I had a conflict before this. And so at around 8:45 in the morning, I realized, oh my goodness, I have to do this interview I'm doing a teacher training and I had to do this interview. And so it sent me into this flurry of, oh, I have to practice for one thing. I have to prepare this talk. And it also made me, I also started worrying, like, what went wrong in my scheduling that, like, I didn't realize that I had to do these things. I was in all these thoughts. And I got a lovely moment to ground right before before going into the interview. And just hearing Lindell again kind of is a regrounding. So thank you for that. When I... So we do, several of us who are involved in facilitating these sanghas, we meet every month at the beginning, and we kind of discuss what's going to go on in that month. And that's how we planned this sequence that we're doing now. And when we first discussed this notion of how we experience faith in the practice, I felt an immediate resistance to the whole idea. And I sat quietly. I think it was probably for the first like 45 minutes, I think, of the discussion. I just sat quietly and I listened and I was just processing this resistance. And then finally I spoke up and I was like, this word, faith, it does this thing to me. And so we went on this discussion based on my feeling about faith, which, you know, it was wonderful because as you know, the folks I get to work with are wonderful people. But I wanted to kind of talk about that. I wanted to talk about what I felt and where I went from there. So when someone asks me to have faith in something, I become suspicious. I feel like I'm being asked not to question. And I wonder if the reason I'm being asked not to question the thing is because it wouldn't hold up to scrutiny. You know, if that's the way that I need to believe this thing, because it wouldn't hold up. So that's what I feel inside me. That's the sort of first reaction I have to faith. And I also have this instinct that everything in my life should at every moment pass the test that it's still serving me, you know? And, you know, faith feels like it's asking me to shut that off. You know, these are all just sorts of impressions I have when I hear these words. So then I sat down to contemplate my relationship to faith. That word, and you know, what's the truth behind that word and my relationship to it. And I realized a few things. The first is just that despite all these suspicions and fears, I depend on faith all the time. You know, I just don't call it that. You know, and this is in all sorts of simple circumstances. When I read a newspaper article or, you know, like an academic research finding, I implicitly kind of make this assessment as I'm reading it without really thinking about it. We all ask ourselves, how much do I trust this? Right? In this era, you know, that's particularly salient. We get very, very different kinds of information from different sources. And if I trust it, I believe what I'm reading. I have faith. We all do this, right? It's the same with the Dharma. The first time I practiced mindfulness deeply, it was in a retreat setting. I had decided that this was something important, and I went off and I started with the retreat. Fortunately, I started with a teacher at Spirit Rock. It was a wonderful introduction. I did so without knowing what a wonderful organization that was. But I very actively decided at the beginning of that week to suspend my questioning just for the time of the retreat. And I'd forgotten this, you know, when we had the discussion about faith, to dive deeply into the practice for at least that period of time so that I would get the best chance of revealing any true value that it had. That's why I kind of suspended this. And it's true that we have to kind of suspend for periods of time that doubting, that questioning, to really dive deeply, right? We might recognize that there's doubt, but we might sort of have to tell it that now's not the time for it. By doing that, by deciding to shut off the doubt, I think maybe even more deeply or importantly, what I was actually doing was having faith in myself. I was trusting myself to be able to dive deeply, to temporarily lose a modicum of control. That sort of constant questioning is a control. I was trusting that I would resurface on the other side of this week, still fully myself, capable of discerning truth, not brainwashed by whatever week I had had, right? And another act of faith occurred at the end of the retreat, because at that point, I decided that this practice would be part of my life in some permanent sort of way. And that took a huge amount of faith for someone as skeptical as I am. I don't think I set aside scrutiny in that process. I think what I decided to do was to trust deeply my own heart, my own instincts that this was something important. And that, you know, it wasn't necessary for me in that moment to like go home and read the literature on mindfulness. And I could just trust what I had experienced. And that was a bit of a radical moment in itself. And on the other side, I didn't feel like it was necessary to make any promises to myself to commit to this, you know, to practice once a day or to always do this. I think this is true even today. If my meditation practice doesn't serve me at some point, I think I will let it go. But I do that without either forcing a constant criticism or a constant skepticism. Is this still serving me? Is this still serving me? I do it because what I'm trusting is not actually the practice. It's the connection that it's given me to my truest heart, my instincts. And so what I take from all this is that faith in the practice isn't for me some calcified commitment to believing that this works, but it's really just a deep trust in myself. And interestingly, what the practice does is it actually strengthens my ability to pay attention to what's truly aligned to me. It increases that trust in myself. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much, Arv, and everyone. Set the scene for my little story. I live in Skagit County now. I live very close to the Skagit River, so this is about a little journey I have there. So I'm walking on the dike. You know, trumpeter swans are everywhere. The river is beautiful. It's a very peaceful environment. And I'm making my way to the riverbank. There's a muddy little path that goes down to the river. And I see two fat tires that have been dumped there. About a month before that, there were like six huge bags of concrete that were dumped there. I immediately was disappointed and just angry. And I go right into fixing mode and thinking mode immediately. Oh, you know, we need to lock the gate. I need to call the county commissioners. You know, this can't be happening again. It's going to happen again. I was not in my body. I did not connect with my body at all. And so when I went to talk to my family about this, I noticed they became very agitated too. And they were all spinning in their own views about what to do. We weren't really even talking with each other. And I felt this feeling that this does not feel like the right direction. Things have escalated. You know, a small voice, I call this Dharma voice, was speaking to me, but I continued to make plans. And I felt this emergence of self becoming very fixed and large. You know, it needs to be free to dispose of difficult items. You know, that was clear to me. And there needs to be an education campaign. I'll call these people in the morning. So knowing then my heart was pounding and I started noticing the agitation in others. And I said, okay, I just got to stop and pause. This is not moving in the right direction. So I just backed off. I stopped engaging and I just listened. I got still, but I still didn't know what was underneath it. So the next day my Dharma voice the next day, people, not a few moments later. Curiosity and questioning was still there. What was underneath all of that reactivity? And, you know, it triggered others, you know, why? And I knew that this didn't feel like right speech, right action, right view. And this other part was challenging for me because it seemed so wholesome to be wanting to fix this. It seemed so wholesome. And then these thoughts came to me. Why don't they see it as sacred as I do? Why don't they see that this needs to be protected and it's pristine? And then I laughed at myself because I saw that it was all about me, my land, my river, my view. I was so attached to my view, and I couldn't see out of that. It was like, it was, as Suze was pointing out too, it was that it's the practice that came back. I didn't go there. Some awareness, a gentle awareness, because I was delighted in this delusion that I saw. And a couple of hallmarks for me, maybe I will notice next time, a sense of urgency, a sense of fixing, or crisis. That those are my keys to the kingdom, so to speak. And I remembered a sutta from the Buddha who's talking about the elements, that air is not disturbed when rain is falling through it or clouds are in it. Water is not disturbed with ducks defecating in it, or, you know, rocks being placed in it. Fire is not disturbed with wet wood being placed in it. And earth, in this case, is not disturbed by what is put on it. Now, and you could even go further and to say, in an elemental sense, those tires are also earth. But I want to make it clear that I'm not saying that there should not be action. Clearly, you know, wise action is also called for. And there was another piece that when I went back, I had a total big picture, balance, perspective, equanimity. I didn't see other. I didn't see the other that our minds like to create when we separate. So I thought this was a shift in perspective, and that was a movement from the clinging, the suffering, to having a faith in that voice that's operating with an intention to practice and an intention to see, that I saw clear seeing in that moment. And may we all have many more. So now we are going to break up into small groups, and I invite you to talk about faith and in your practice about what keeps you coming back to the cushion, what keeps you practicing. Thank you for coming.